Wednesday, 15th April, Chuf Vov Nissan, Rabbi Gershom Spitzer, in Yonad Yom.
In Yonad Yom, probably is as high the topic as you can want. Yeah. But actually, the last time I was here, I don't know if it's the same audience, but we discussed various aspects of Shechita that are Nagaya for today. This is actually my line. I actually work in the Shechita. I actually visit the Shechita all the time. But unfortunately, the Goyim, the law of the land, is unfortunately being used to work against our favor in Shechita. The main focus now in the news whenever Shechita comes up is that how inhuman it is and how cruel it is. Now, I thought perhaps it would be a good idea to maybe visit the subject called Tzar Bala Chaim, which we know the tools used by those, should we call them anti-Shechita groups, is Tzar Bala Chaim. That is what they use. I mean, in the English language, it's the welfare of the animals. That is what they're caring for. So I want to visit the subject of in the way of the way our Torah views Tzar Bala Chaim. We actually had I discussed it with a vet recently who's very anti Shechita in idea, and he was saying that, you know, it's all a question of the humanity, how we behave to animals. That was actually the way he worded it. So I told him, we actually had 3,000 years before you, we actually had laws protecting the welfare of the animals. But I think that it would be a good idea to see the Torah way of seeing Tzar Bala Chaim. Actually, just for information, for whoever doesn't know, probably everybody does know, there was recently, about 5 months ago, somebody launched a petition online to enlist support for anti-Shechita. It wasn't actually called anti-Shechita, it's called Shechita without pre-stunning, which in effect means anti-Shechita. And it attracted more than 100,000 signatures, which compelled it to be brought to a debate in Parliament. What actually happened was something very interesting. There was a counter-petition that attracted, in just over 1 week, it attracted more than 125,000 signatures. So it somehow highlighted that this issue is not so clear-cut. Whatever it is, we need to know what is the Tzar Bala Chaim subject, according to us. So for a start, Shechita itself is also an issue that is subject to some or many haluchas just because of Tzar Bala Chaim. For instance, in the Gemara tells us, why do we have to shecht from the side we shecht? We shecht actually from the lower part of the neck, rather than from the back. The back of the neck has the spine. We don't shecht from the spine because it would cause the behind unnecessary pain, which is one of the things that we have to be very careful. We have to be very careful not to cause the animal unnecessary pain. The lushan of the Gemara is b'ro'er lo misa yufa. And also we find many other aluchas which have really nothing to do with Shechita, also focusing on Tzav Balachayim. For instance, we find the most common of it is we just lined on Pesach, we on Chol HaMoed, we lined in the Torah, there's mitzvahs prike. If you see an animal going on the street, they used to carriage used to be done by animals. So if you see an animal carrying a load and the animal can't take the load and is lying under the load, there's a mitzvah to be poirik. There's a mitzvah to help the owner of the animal to unload the animal and thereby causing the animal, rather than preventing the animal from being in unnecessary pain. There's, in the Gemara, there's a machlokes when one is allowed to take schar, when one is allowed to take payment for being poirik, for taking off, for unloading an animal. The reasons given for those that believe that one isn't allowed to take schar is because tzav balachayim is a mitzvah deraisa, and one is mechiyev to prevent an animal from having unnecessary pain. Another thing we find that if there's two people who are there, one has an animal to be loaded, that it means that he needs help to load the load onto the animal, and there's another person who has an animal that needs to be unloaded, the unloading comes first. For what reason? The reason given is Tzav Balachayim again. Because you have to first make sure the animal is prevented from pain, then considering the monetary loss or gain of the other person who needs his animal loaded. We find Oysoy Ves Benoy. One isn't allowed to shecht an animal, and the animal's actually it concerns only a female. It only concerns a female because the male animal, one doesn't know who the child of a male animal is. It's not possible to know. But the mother and the child are not allowed to be shechted on the same day. The reason given is also in the Chinuch and in the Ramban. The reason is given because an animal will have pain by having its son being shechted on the same day. Although one can argue that it can be done without the animal seeing or whatever, but this is one of the reasons given. And so therefore, we need to understand why, if that is the case, why when, for instance, there's a zukan, a Rosh Hashiva or a roof, going and seeing an animal having to be unloaded, there is an exemption. A zukan does not have to be poirik, because it's ein elufi chavoidai. So the question is, why, if we are so concerned about tzav alachayim, why doesn't an elderly, a respected person, for whom it will be a slight to his respect to have to unload an animal, why is he put there? If we have such a prime concern for tzav alachayim, why is he put there? Also, there's another mitzvah where we see problem, not so much of tzav alachayim, but of being concerned about the welfare of animals, and that is shaliach hakan. We find there's a mitzvah that when you want to take the young birds or the eggs, one has to first send away the mother. Now, although the Mishnah does tell us, if somebody will say that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has so much rachmunas that he tells us that we have to send away the mother before taking the child, one tells him to be quiet. It's true that firstly there is actually a machlokes tanuim whether one is allowed to say reasons for the mitzvah satoire. There's a machlokes of tanuim, and we pasten that one is allowed to say reasons. The only danger there is in saying reasons that one shouldn't say that when the reason doesn't apply, the mitzvah doesn't apply. The reason given is the reason, but it does not mean that the mitzvah applies exclusively when I understand the reason. So even if a reason is given, when the reason doesn't apply, the mitzvah still would apply. But one is allowed to say reasons to the mitzvah satoret, which is what the Sefer HaChinuch does throughout his Sefer. Every mitzvah he gives a reason for the mitzvah, and he mentions a few times that it's because we pasken that one is allowed to give a reason. That is one thing. Another point is that there are some Rishonim who say that the reason why when somebody says Al Kan Tzipa Yegi Rachmechu, Al Kan Tzipa Yegi Rachmechu, that the mitzvah of Shaliach HaKan is a mitzvah with such rachmunas, the reason why one should not allow this to be said is because HaKadosh Baruch Hu rachmunas by a human is dictated by human instincts. Rachmunas is one of the human instincts. So if somebody says HaKadosh Baruch Hu has rachmunas, it might appear to say that he is overridden by force of certain instincts, which is not true. Actually, we find in Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, we say a tefillah, we say lekayil oirech din, we say lefoyel rachmov badin. So actually, the Reb Chaim Briske actually asks, what is the illusion of lefoyel rachmov? Why lefoyel? Lefoyel means he makes it work. So he says, he answers this teretz. He says that by a human, rachmunas is not something that one makes rachmunas work. Rachmunas is something that's aroused by whatever happens or whatever the circumstances make it. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not governed by any feelings or things like that. It's He who chooses to work these feelings. So therefore we ask Lefoyel Rachmov. We talk about Him being mafil, being making the rachmunas work now. But it's not something that, it's not compulsory. It's not something that compels Him. Rachmunas is not something that compels HaKadosh Baruch Hu is a Rachman. But it's not Rachmunas is one of the tools he uses, but it's not necessarily something. It's not something that governs HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That is also another reason why one shouldn't say it. But generally speaking, the Rishonim do believe that the reason for Shaliach HaKan is Rachmunas on the Balachayim. So, if that is the case, how come that we don't see eye to eye with the Goyish Lahavdil Elif Avdulis, the Goyish agenda of Tzar Balachayim? How come that we cannot see eye to eye? The answer to that is, it's something very simple once it's brought out. The difference between our chiyuv and our obligation to have rachmunas on Balachayim has got nothing to do with the Balachayim. It's not because HaKadosh Baruch Hu so much loves the animals, He wants us to care for them. It's got nothing to do with that. Because we know, we read it in the Mishnah, and we know that everything was created in order to be there for somebody who accepts the Torah. It's the whole creation has been created to serve the Yid who has accepted the Torah. As we know, Bereishis b'shvil Yisroel shenikre Reishis, that is the reason, b'shvil HaTorah shenikre Reishis, that is the reason for creation, and everything, all the Balachayim, and everything that is has been created to help them. And anything that's there to help them is actually there for them. But one isn't allowed to be cruel to an animal, simply because this is bad midas. It's bad midas, and it's wrong, and it's corruptive for a human to be cruel to an animal. That is the problem that we have with Tzar Balachayim. The Tzar Balachayim is being given. The Gemara tells us that Rabban Yakudish had Yisirim for 7 years or for 13 years. There's two days in the Gemara. Whatever it was terrible Yisirim that he had. And the Gemara tells us that the reason he got these Yisirim was because of him not having enough Rachmunas on Balachayim. The Gemara tells us one story was of a sheep that was going to the slaughter, and it came to shield itself in Rabbi Nakudish's coat. And Rabbi Nakudish told the sheep, go to the Shechita, because that was what you were created for. For somebody in with the greatness of Rabbi Yakudish, it was considered a cruelty to an animal, and therefore he received Yisirim for 7 years, for 13 years. It's a long time, whatever it is. He had Yisirim which were almost unbearable, and the Gemara tells us that the Yisirim went away because he for a different case of where he had Rachmunas on Balachayim. So we find that the problem is not the Balchai, because the Balchai was created for slaughter, that is true. We all know that. That's what we all do. But to actually send it to the slaughter when this is what its problem is. It was running away from the Shechita. To send it to the Shechita was for somebody in Rabbi Nakudish greatness considered cruelty. And therefore, it was a problem, should we call it the problem of Rabbi Nakudish? It wasn't the problem of the animal. The animal could have been slaughtered. Actually, we find in Chazal that before the Mabul, meat was not allowed to be consumed. Because the HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted to bring out this point that as long as the human person hasn't done anything special to merit Schiyas, he's the same as the animal. What is the difference between a human and an animal if the human doesn't keep the Torah? So therefore, before the Mabul, one wasn't allowed to consume meat. After the Mabul, when Noach was the one who, in his Schiyas, all the animals survived, because if not for Noach, the whole creation wouldn't survive. Therefore, it was permitted for him, from the Mabul, it was permitted for him to eat meat, as we find in the Torah. After the Mabul, the Torah tells him, "Kol chayas asuda v'chol degah ayom b'yadchem netuni." From now on, you're permitted to eat meat. So therefore, we are permitted to eat meat because the animals were created to serve humans. Basically, humans to keep the Torah, and even the humans who were not created to keep the Torah, they were created to serve the others who keep the Torah. It sounds very interesting that billions of people were bashavim for these few people who keep the Torah, but that is the way Chazal tell us, and we believe that what Chazal tell us, that is the... Now the Goy, Lahavd Le'elof Avdulas, their problem is the welfare of the animal. According to them, the animal has rights just like the human has rights, and therefore, why shouldn't we protect the rights of the human? Now, the problem with this is... Sorry? That's the right of the animal, exactly. So the Tzav Alachaim, according to the Torah, is the obligation of the human, whereas the Goyshe Tzav Alachaim is the right of the animal, as we said. Now, the right of the animal, who is advocating the right of the animal? It's a human advocating the right of the animal. Yes? It's not the animal advocating its own right, because if the animal would be advocating its right, it would say that it doesn't want to be slaughtered at all. So, in effect, it's faulty. The law, the way it is, protecting the rights of the animal, is faulty, because we all agree that the animal is allowed to be shechted. That means that the animal does not have the right to live. So what right does the animal have? The animal has a right to have the least pain inflicted. Now, that is true, as our obligation is also to inflict it as little pain as possible. But if we take it from the human part, the human needs to consume it, as long as he's not doing anything to cause the animal unnecessary pain, we can understand that he's doing nothing wrong. He's slaughtering an animal in order to have food for himself. Now the fact that they have a problem, that Shechita is not as humane as, which is not true, but we're not out to prove that. Even if it would be true, it would not be a problem of Tzav Alachaim, because that is the reason I asked the question before, why does a Zuken V'ayin L'fi Chavoyde, somebody, an elderly, respectable person, does not have to unload from an animal, although there is Tzav Alachaim, and Tzav Alachaim is probably, according to most Rishonim, it's Min HaTorah. But despite that fact, it's only there as long as it doesn't conflict with the basic needs of a human. And for an elderly, respectable person, a Talmud Chacham, Aruf, to have to unload is going to conflict with his own needs. And when there is the needs of a human, they override the needs of an animal, because the animal was created only to serve the human. You can't now have the animal infringing on the needs of the human. So therefore, is put from Prikya. The same would apply according to Shechita. If, let's say, for argument's sake, although I don't agree with it, but for argument's sake, even if Shechita would be more of a problem than the Lavdel the Goyshe method, one would still be allowed to do this, and to, not only that, to infringe on that right, And to tell a human, you're not allowed to, basically if you tell me you're not allowed to do this method, which would mean they're not allowed to eat meat, is actually infringing on the rights of the human. If we believe that the human is the one who is the reason for creation, and the animal is only there to serve him, any simple person would understand that if the religious law restricts him from eating meat otherwise, then obviously you can't infringe on that right, because you're infringing on the right of a human. But being that you take it from the other way around, and you start with the rights of the animal, so then if there's the rights of the animal and the rights of the human conflicting, then how, I want to go one stage further. For instance, we all know that plants also live. Nobody's ever explored their rights. I don't think so. Anyway, why shouldn't we say that... Ms. Charles has? Well, I suppose it takes a Chacham Meruzim, but whatever it is, the question is, why shouldn't one say, how are you allowed to chop down a tree in order to... The tree could blossom for another 120 years. Why are you cutting down the tree in order to make a table? Has anybody ever explored... And if you do cut down the tree, let's say we agree that you do cut down the tree, are we looking for the best way to cut down the tree? With the least pain for the tree? Well, nobody's explored the pain of the tree. But why aren't we exploring those rights? Because everybody understands, being that trees are not so, you know, they don't wag their tail, and they're not very friendly to anybody, and they never smile to anybody, so nobody's ever considered of whether he has rights or not. But the honest truth is that had we looked at it that way, obviously one would understand that being that the tree is there to serve the human, so the most practical and convenient way to cut it down would be the best way. And therefore, the same would apply. And the interesting thing is that at the time when, I think it's, I'm not exactly sure when, but the beginning of the 1900s, when the law of stunning meat came out, at that time, the government understood that the Jews need an exemption. And they actually worded the law that the exemption is for Jews to slaughter for the food of the Jews. Now, it's very interesting. They should have said Jews are allowed to slaughter. Why did they have to add on for the food of Jews? And they could have added on, if they wanted to say that they are only allowed to slaughter for Jews, they could have written the law as Jews are allowed to slaughter for Jews. Why do you need to add in for the food of the Jews? So the reason why they added in for the food of the Jews is because, as we know, the nature of Shechita is that many behemoths are not kosher. Yeah, let's say we're running at, as nowadays everything is glut, we're running at about a third. In this country, it's about a third of the animals end up being kosher. And also we have the hind quarter, where we have big problems getting the hind quarter kosher, which was at that time very, very prevalent in the beginning of the 1900s. So therefore, they added in for the food of the Jews, obviously meaning that they are wanting to protect the rights of the animals, but they don't want to infringe on the rights of the human to eat food. So being that the Jews have a problem of stunning the animal beforehand, so therefore there is an exemption. Nowadays, that the law nowadays is to protect the rights of the animal, so now they're using the food of the Jews. For the contrary, they're saying, so if the case is that Jews are only allowed to slaughter for the food of the Jews, that means that if the food would come into the general market, it's not exempted. Which is quite obvious that was not the letter of the law. But English law has an interesting way of not working with common sense, but rather working with precedent. Obviously, the common sense is there. The thing to create the law, but to interpret the law, usually common sense is not used. Oh, I can't say usually, but in many cases that I've seen, especially in this, common sense is not used. If anybody would use a little bit of common sense, they would realize that the reason that for the food of the Jews was inserted was in order to enable the Jews to slaughter more meat, so that they should be able to have for the food of the Jews. Nobody was concerned about where the animal would get to. That wasn't the problem. The problem was how the Jews would get their food. That was the problem, which obviously common sense prevailed at the time of that. But now, to interpret this law and say that the food of the Jews was inserted in order to restrict that you shouldn't slaughter any, even if that would render you that would render the animal treifa, it would have to be, how should I say, it would have to be destroyed. Yes. So would that cause less pain for animals? That would actually cause more animals to be slaughtered. Now you've got a surplus of animals, let's say 70% or 80% of what the Jews slaughter are actually being, they've been slaughtered already, and they're there. So actually you could distribute this in the general market, and thereby you'd have less animals slaughtered. So to say that no, for the rights of the animals, these would have to be rejected because they haven't been pre-sunned, is not protecting the rights of the animals either. It's only there to make problems. Now, I'll add on a little note to this, and I'll say that, generally speaking, we always find that those who are trying to protect Shechita constantly say that the anti-Shechita campaigners have a tinge of anti-Semitism to them. Now, I want to try and explain why I think this is, there is an argument for this. The main reason, I think, would be that if somebody believes that the human being has been, it is actually the prime concern of creation, and everything is there to serve a human being, and the animals, the protection of animals is rather there for a moral obligation of having a human not to be cruel, then obviously such a law would not ever be considered. It would never be considered that a human should not be allowed to eat meat because an animal is having pain, which is necessary. I mean, you could argue it's unnecessary, but obviously if somebody wouldn't eat otherwise, then it's necessary. But if you will be saying that, listen, we have humans and we have animals, we have to protect all of their rights, and we have to decide what rights are the right ones, you end up saying that, you know, the animals have rights, and the Jews have come with their Bible, and they've restricted it, they've tried to make such cruel methods in order to get their meat. This is the implication that this type of campaign has, which is obviously wrong. As we've said, we've been protecting, in Shechita itself, we've been protecting the laws, the rights of the animals, as they want to call it, long before them. The only difference is that they don't override human concern. And the way things are, the interesting thing is that this exemption that they've made originally is now working, if I may say, against us. In America, Shechita is considered the humane method of Shechita. Here, it's not considered a humane method. By research of, it's flawed research, it's agenda-based research. The research is not conclusive by any standards. I mean, even they agree that it's not conclusive by any standards. We actually had two MPs coming to the Shechita to watch their method of Shechita, or of killing, and then our Shechita method. One of them was out of the door as the shooting went on, they ran out of the room, even before they saw Shechita. And the other one, after they saw Shechita, they saw both of them, and he said he can't see any difference between the two, it seems to be the same. I'm not going to go into the details of that, of the research and of the facts of whether they are or not more humane. But in America, it's considered a humane method. Whether it's the best method or it's not the best method is irrespective. It's a humane method and it's allowed to be done. Here, because there is an exemption, basically, nobody's ever tried to prove that it is humane. Because if you're going to try and prove that it's humane, the first thing you're going to have to do is you have to be prepared to forego the exemption. Because as long as it's exempt, why do you have to prove that it's humane? You're exempt. So the only way to explore it is by agreeing to forego the exemption of the early 1900s, and then to try and explore whether it's humane, which is too risky, and nobody wants to do it. So in effect, what was supposed to be done there as a favor for the Jews has been turned into a problem. I don't know what it would have been otherwise, because you never know how they would have tried to manipulate the agenda. It's a lot money based as well, because many of these anti-Shechita campaigners are funding the general elections, the election campaigns for either parties, and they basically somehow, obviously it's in all impure intentions, but the end is that the agenda of the funders does filter through to the agenda of the people who are funded by them. So in effect, it's a big problem, and it's a big problem of how to prove that it's not really, it's very hard to prove what pain an animal is exactly experiencing. The only way to prove it is by a human getting into the box and trying to, and I don't know if they'd be alive to tell the tale, but it's very hard to be able to prove exactly what pain is being experienced, and they know this. But it's all theory-based, and it's all very... So the question is, so we need to be mispalal, Amos, that the Rebbein Shleilim should protect our Shechita. It's all, we believe it's all being driven from above to make us do tshiva and to be able to, because it's all, we know, La Melucha V'Surim B'Yad Hashem. So as the law stands now, one is allowed to shecht in this country, and the Abish Zolalf should be like that for many years to come, till Mashiach will come, and we won't need all that.